50 years to stabilize, so.
I was curious, how much fertilizer is usually added to the field crop, because you're so thirsty.
I think we got.
Very little, these are, they fertilize with nitrogen far more than phosphorus.
Right, so even at these two levels,
The plants aren't finding it.
And you expect that in all systems, any system that takes phosphorus fertilizer?
No, not necessarily, we just know for wheat, we've seen this pretty consistently on the prairies with wheat crops, and wheat is bred to grow really well with fertilizer, I mean, it's, I work in the research station with plant breeders, and it's the one thing they never look at. Other crops, and I think, for example, legumes, it's a different story, that's why some of the pastures are different, oh, we found it back. But yeah, no, it was a surprise to us, but it's something we've seen fairly consistently with wheat in this region. Nitrogen is what it is more deficient, anyway.
Okay.
But also remember too, that the low tests are brave, but the Olsons aren't necessarily that low when you bring in the organic phosphorus.
Okay, thank you very much. Can I believe Susan, Eric? Is going to tell us, take us down south to Brazil, and we're still going to continue talking about phosphorus, so here you go.
We're actually going to talk about both.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, so we've, well, first of all, thank you to all of those who are still hanging in for the last talk of this session. We've heard a lot about organic matter this morning, a little bit about phosphorus, and I'm going to talk about both phosphorus chemistry and organic matter chemistry. This work that I'm going to describe this morning was part of Clovis Lamboera's PhD project. The objectives of our work were to understand soil phosphorus chemistry by combining some traditional approaches and some analytical approaches, so we looked at sequential extraction of phosphorus fractions, also NMR, fluorescence spectroscopy, and high-resolution mass spec. We looked at both soil phosphorus and organic matter chemistry. And Clovis-Lund also wanted to investigate the differences between altered and unaltered sites, and I'll talk about that in a minute. I'm going to go pretty quickly through my first few slides. I did look at how much time I have, but I still think my talk is a little bit long. So I'm going to go quickly through the first few slides. I do want to set the stage a little bit and describe the region where these soils were sampled. So my talk is structured like this. First of all, the characteristics of the region, then specific site descriptions, a little bit about methodology, and then hopefully time for some results and significance. And as I mentioned, this was Clovis-Lund's PhD work. He got a PhD from Santa Catarina State University in Brazil. We published this work a couple of months ago in Geoderma Regional, so that's where more details can be found. So Santa Catarina State is here in the blue. It's in the very south part, not the southernmost state, but the next southernmost state in Brazil. It's not in the Amazon. It's south of there, so it's not tropical. It's a pretty temperate, or I would say mild kind of climate, fairly high rainfall area, average annual temperature about 13 degrees C. The Araucaria moist forest is a subtype of the Atlantic forest biome. This is a large, was at one time very large, globally important ecosystem. This subtype is characterized by the presence of this tree, the Araucaria angustifolia, or piranha pine, Brazilian pine. So this area, the Araucaria moist forest area, very complex mosaic of plants. About 13% of the plant species are thought to be endemic, and there are a number of threatened plant species and also endemic and threatened vertebrates. So a somewhat fragile area with high biodiversity. And it's fragile because there are a couple threats to the area. Illegal timber harvesting occurs there, and then quite a bit of conversion of forest land to agriculture. And there's predicted, of course, as population grows, to be more and more agriculture in this area. The original area has been reduced by about almost 90%. Very little of it is in protected areas, and I'm going to talk about the soils in a minute. They pretty much support very low levels of soluble phosphorus, so phosphorus is very important for plant productivity in this area and in these types of soils. Basaltic parent material, fairly acidic, but moderately weathered, not highly weathered. kaolinite present, so there are silicate clay minerals, but also lots of iron and aluminum oxides and hydroxides there, and as I mentioned, low levels of soluble phosphorus. So the goal with Clevison's study was to look at phosphorus, look at potential threats, and examine whether there seemed to be significant and potentially irreversible changes occurring under different land uses, so unaltered sites versus altered sites. The soils are called humic cambisols in the Brazilian system of taxonomy, and they're inceptisols for us. So here's the state of Santa Catarina, and this is the region from which he took his soils. He collected samples at the surface from five different sites, and he was looking for soils that are high in organic matter, so basically high elevation soils. And he sampled natural and human altered sites. So the human altered sites, the most altered sites in his study were in an apple orchard, so this is a common type of agriculture in the area. He sampled both within apple row and between apple row, and then he also looked at a loblolly pine plantation, so it was altered, but not quite as altered as the orchard. And then he had two native sites, one native bush, so shrubby tree-like vegetation there, and then a native grassland site. So I want to describe the sites a little bit more specifically. So here's the apple orchard. The orchard was planted about 30 years ago, limed before it was planted, and then it's received yearly applications of fertilizer, including nitrogen and 25 kilograms per hectare of P2O5, so every year phosphorus addition. He had sites, or he took soils from within the row, but then also between the rows. The between the row part had a vegetation cover that was mowed, so the farmer was keeping this between the row site mowed. The fertilizer went down right in the row in a band, and between the rows, as I mentioned, the farmer was mowing the vegetation. In the row, he was trying to control weeds with herbicide. I'm not sure how successful that was. And then the three other sites that Clevison sampled were chosen to be pretty close to the orchard, and soils that looked fairly similar looking at morphological horizons. So here's the pine plantation site, about 10-year-old trees, not much understory, mostly needles in the understory, never received any fertilization. And then the native bush site had a mix of tree type species. This particular species, Araucaria angustifolia, and a variety of others, and this site represented the native forest vegetation. And then the native grassland had a variety of grass species mixed in that site, and on another altered site. So we formed some hypotheses about what we thought we'd see in our phosphorus fractionation data. We thought we'd see some loss of organic matter in these altered sites, and then probably a loss of organic phosphorus, conversion to inorganic phosphorus, in both the pine plantation and the orchard soil. And we thought we'd probably see a stronger shift toward inorganic phosphorus fractions in the orchard soil, particularly because they had received inorganic phosphorus fertilization. We didn't form many hypotheses about what we'd see in terms of organic matter. Our primary way of probing the organic matter chemistry was the high-resolution mass spec. We've seen a little bit of that this morning already. There are some data sets on soil organic matter with high-resolution spec in the literature, but really not a lot so that we could predict what we were going to see. So the methods that we use, sequential phosphorus fractionation, a traditional sequential fractionation, we looked at fluorescence spectroscopy of hot water and sodium pyrophosphate extract, so the organic matter extractable there. We looked at NMR, high-resolution mass spec of the same hot water and sodium pyrophosphate extract. So the hot water removes very labile carbon, a few percent of the carbon that's there. The pyrophosphate removes adsorbed carbon, mineral-associated carbon, when it removes iron and aluminum. You see a lot of carbon coming out. So two fractions. Here's the sequential phosphorus fractionation, anion exchange resin, bicarbonate, sodium hydroxide, two sodium hydroxide extractions. And then each extract was fractionated into inorganic and organic phosphorus. Headley sequential fractionation, a lot of advantages, a lot of disadvantages. There's a lot of data like this. So it's very crosses over many types of ecosystems. However, it's more operationally defined, not a lot of biogeochemical usefulness to those fractions. So we added on some additional analyses to perhaps give us some more chemical and mechanistic information. The fluorescent spectroscopy, a little bit of detail here. And again, I'll just go quickly through the methods slides. NMR, clobazone extracted with sodium hydroxide and EDTA. He submitted these actually to another university in Brazil, Federal University of Santa Maria, and they analyzed the soils, did the NMR analysis. The mass spec data, we did in our lab the extracts, the water and pyrophosphate extracts, and then we sent them down to, or sent them to, Old Dominion University in Virginia, and they were analyzed there. So I just wanted to say a word about the high-resolution mass spec data. So this is a figure from a different paper. The insets here, so organic matter, dissolved organic matter, and humic acids. Insets are for 200 to 700 molecular weight range. So you get a very complex mix of peak weights. The red and blue spectra are a very, very narrow molecular weight range, 328.965 to 329.12 mass to charge ratio. So blown up a very narrow molecular weight range, and you see a number of masses appear in there, and then those masses have formulas assigned to them. And the formulas are assigned by formula calculators and mathematical means, using chemically realistic combinations of atoms. We had, of course, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen. As well, we considered nitrogen, sulfur, and phosphorus. So we were looking at some of the hetero atoms in the organic matter as well, trying to be as realistic as possible about what we thought organic matter would contain. And then there were various chemical criteria that had to be satisfied as well. So there was a mathematical means of assigning those peaks to the masses. What you get is the masses. Okay, so now to the results. These are the five sites here, the pine plantation, native grassland, native bush, and the two apple sites here. The pine plantation, lowest pH, the apple sites that have been limed, a higher pH. These soils were relatively high organic matter, ranging from about 3.6 to 5.5% carbon. The hot water extract extracted about 3% of the carbon that was in the soil. This is grams per kilogram carbon. And the pyrophosphate extract extracted around 60% of the carbon. So you did see a lot of the carbon released with the pyrophosphate extract. I've used the pyrophosphate extract on soils in Maine before. They don't have nearly as many oxides and hydroxides. They're more silicate clays, and you don't remove nearly as much carbon with pyrophosphate extract. But in the Brazilian soils, you did remove quite a lot of carbon. So here is extractable aluminum, iron, and phosphorus by diethionite extract, aluminum, iron, and phosphorus by oxalate, and then the texture. The soils were not very sandy. They had a lot of clay, 50 to 60% clay. Most of the iron and aluminum that was extracted was in the DCB extract rather than the oxalate extract. So the ratio of iron DC or iron oxalate to iron DCB was very low. So most of the iron and aluminum oxide hydroxide material was fairly well crystalline ordered material. And it also, the majority of the phosphorus that was removed was associated with that more crystalline material. Was about 8 to 10% by weight iron removed by the DCB. Okay, so I just sort of summarized the sequential extraction, sequential phosphorus extraction information for the five different sites, very little labile phosphorus. The moderately labile category includes the inorganic phosphorus that was extracted by the bicarbonate and the two sodium hydroxide fractions. The organic phosphorus includes the organic phosphorus fraction extracted by those bicarbonate and sodium hydroxide extractions. And here is the organic phosphorus expressed as a percent. So using sequential extractions or sequential fractionation, somewhere around 24 to 34% of the phosphorus was organic. No difference, no significant difference in either the amount or percentage of organic phosphorus between the sites. So this methodology really didn't show a lot of change due to apple orchard or pine plantation culture. The sites had about 0.1% phosphorus. A lot of it was residual, so this would be the unextracted, so not extracted by any of the sodium hydroxide fractions or sodium hydroxide plus fornication. Okay, just quickly, the fluorescence data looked pretty consistent with other studies of organic matter, fluorescent studies of organic matter in the literature. Three components showed up. Component one, component two are described in the literature as kind of terrestrial organic matter, humic-like. Component three looked like potentially the peak locations looked similar to peaks or a component that has been described as a product of microbial degradation in the literature. So these are excitation and emission on the x-axis, emission, excitation range on the y, and then the peak locations of these three, peak emission locations of these three components. The intensity, arbitrary units, fluorescence intensity, for the water extractable fraction, ordering the sites from low pH to high pH, looked like higher fluorescence intensity for some of the components, two of the components, in the higher pH soils, not much difference in the pyrophosphate. Okay, switching over to look at the NMR data, the sodium hydroxide EDTA extract here, designed to perhaps preferentially extract organic phosphorus, it did that in these soils. In the sodium hydroxide EDTA extracts, 55 to 85 or so percent of the phosphorus was organic. In the whole soil, in contrast, only maybe 30 to 40 percent of the phosphorus was organic. So just to show a couple of NMR spectra, the group that did this analysis did not have any kind of internal standard, so we didn't try to identify specific compounds within the orthophosphate monoester class. So we just grouped all the peaks together and looked at a total area under the curve here for four different categories, basically orthophosphate, orthophosphate monoesters, orthophosphate diesters, and pyrophosphate. So these are three of the sites. This is the pine plantation, this is the native grassland, this is the native tree, native bush site. Just to point out here, the native grassland site, I'm going to tell you, had high amounts of organic phosphorus, so the peaks for orthophosphate monoesters and diesters were large in that particular sample. It was pretty high in organic matter, so that would be expected. The native bush lower, pine plantation lower, and then when you looked at the apple orchards, much lower peaks in the regions where you'd expect organic phosphorus compounds to be detected. So just to summarize that data for you, in these four different categories, orthophosphate and pyrophosphate, of course, the inorganic categories, and the diester and monoester, the organic categories, and percentages of the sort of total amount of phosphorus detected in each of these categories reported for the five sites over here. The apple row site had the lowest amount of organic phosphorus, and maybe that's not unexpected. That site had inorganic phosphorus applied to it. The native grassland site, highest amount of organic phosphorus there. Okay, the mass spectrometry data. We found about 2,000 plus or minus a few hundred peaks or assigned formulas in the water extracts and also the pyrophosphate extracts. That's pretty typical of what you find. Molecular weights in this range, also pretty typical. For all the samples except the apple row sample, the higher number of formulas showed up in the pyrophosphate extracted organic matter, so the sorbed organic matter, suggesting maybe higher chemical diversity there. So this is the first table of the high-resolution mass spec data. So I'll point out first these first four columns here. These are polycyclic aromatic compounds, highly aromatic compounds, highly unsaturated compounds, and unsaturated aliphatic compounds. So four different categories that we grouped our formulas into. And the numbers here are the percent of formulas for either water extractable carbon or here pyrophosphate extractable carbon in each of those four categories. And then these three columns are sort of a separate data set. These three columns show you how many of the formulas or what percent of the formulas had either nitrogen or phosphorus or both nitrogen and phosphorus in them for both the water extractable and the pyrophosphate extractable. So a couple things to point out about this data set. One is that there is a lot more aromatic carbon or a much higher percentage of the formulas showed up in the aromatic carbon categories for the sorbed carbon, the pyrophosphate extractable carbon. In the water extractable, very labile carbon, much higher percentages of the formula, 25% unsaturated aliphatic, around 60% highly unsaturated in the labile carbon, lower quantities, lower percentages of formulas in the pyrophosphate extractable carbon. However, more higher percentages of carbon falling into the aromatic categories. We did a couple of statistical comparisons, so I'll point out F2, the bottom row here, which showed greater significance, more difference, and that comparison compared the apple orchard soils to all the other soils. So basically, the most altered soils were different, statistically different in many of these categories compared to native grassland, native bush, and the pine plantation all lumped together. They were different specifically in that they tended to have more aromatic carbon. So the apple orchard soils tended to be a bit higher in terms of percentages of formulas in the aromatic carbon categories compared to the other three sample types. Switching over a little bit to look at nitrogen, phosphorus, and then the NP categories. Not very much phosphorus, so I was kind of focused on phosphorus. Not a lot of phosphorus in the labile carbon, or not very many formulas that contain phosphorus in the labile carbon. Even lower numbers of formulas contain phosphorus in the pyrophosphate extractable carbon. However, kind of interestingly, about 5% of the formulas in the sorbed carbon contain both nitrogen and phosphorus. So again, maybe indicating a higher chemical complexity to that carbon. Okay, more information about the mass spec data in this slide. This unit isn't correct. These aren't percent of formulas any longer, but they're just parameters, basically. So mass to charge ratio, average mass to charge ratio of all the peaks that were extracted, for example, the pine plantation soil. And these are numbers of carbon, average numbers of carbon in the formula, and average numbers of oxygen, average number of nitrogen, H to C ratios, double bond equivalent to carbon, and here's an aromaticity index. I don't show you any Van Creveln plots, but I do show you H to C ratios for this data set. Again, the most significant difference seemed to be the apple orchard soils versus everything else in terms of statistical significance. The apple orchard soils were higher in nitrogen, for example, or the numbers of nitrogen in the formulas. Not surprisingly, they received nitrogen. Also, not phosphorus. Aromaticity, higher aromaticity indices for the apple orchard soils in both the sorbed carbon and the labile carbon. Perhaps slightly lower molecular weights in the sorbed carbon for the apple orchard soil. So clearly some differences there.
1 minute.
1 minute? Okay, I will go to conclusions. Significance or conclusions, obviously the tools we use influence what we think is happening in the soil. NMR identifies chemically meaningful forms of phosphorus in the extracts, and it showed more sensitivity to land use changes. The sequential fractionation didn't really show a lot of sensitivity to land use changes. the mass spec, high-resolution mass spec, about 1% of the labile components contain phosphorus, and about 5 to 6% of the sorbed carbon components contain NNP. Both the mass spec and the NMR did indicate there were some significant differences due to differences in land use in these soils. We saw loss of organic phosphorus fractions, and we saw increased aromaticity in the soil organic matter in the apple orchard soils compared to everything else. The pine plantations, however, didn't seem to make, there was less impact on soil properties in the pine plantations, so they looked in many ways similar to the unaltered sites. This is important because mineralization of phosphorus in natural, organic phosphorus in natural ecosystems is the main process supplying plants, even sometimes in agricultural systems, the main process supplying plants with phosphorus, so that's important if we're losing phosphorus, organic phosphorus fractions. And these changes that we saw in organic matter chemistry, changes in aromaticity and other parameters under apple cultivation could be the cause or possibly the driver of shifts in microbial population. There's some studies in the literature that clearly indicate that microbial populations are different in cropped or cultivated soils compared to natural. And exactly why that might be the case, we don't really know. So just some acknowledgments and thanks. Hopefully that was on time.